Okay, so thanks for bearing with us there and for coming along for the Spotlight on Dan Parent panel. I assume you all know who Dan Parent is then.
Yeah.
As you say, with great excitement. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I kind of thought we could get straight into it and get a bit more insight into Dan's work and I guess how it all started. So I was kind of curious as to what prompted you to pursue art to begin with. You know, what actually made you go down that path and what's your secret origin as a comics fan?
Well, I was a comic book fan since I was, you know, 5 years old, like most of the people probably at this convention. And grew up as, you know, I read Archie and I read Harvey Comics, you know, then superheroes, got into those. So I was always drawing, you know, all the time at a very young age. Through school, through high school. And, you know, I just sort of always knew that was the thing I wanted to do. It was the thing I always fell back on. So I just kept drawing and drawing, and then that's sort of what led me to the Joe Kubert School.
Yeah, which I was going to ask about that as far as going there and kind of, you know, did you go there straight away from school to the Kubert School?
After I got out of high school, I went to college for a year to be an English teacher, and that didn't pan out so well. I really knew that was not what I wanted to do. Like, logic told me I should do something sort of, like, a little more safe and practical, but all I was doing was drawing on all my notebooks and kind of really concentrating just on my art classes in school, so I kind of knew I had to, you know, make the plunge, so. And I had encouragement from my parents to just to try it. Mm. So I had always, you know, seen the Joe Kubert School ads in all the comic books growing up. And I also had two friends who also went to Kubert School, too. So I sort of had an inside scoop from them. And I checked out the school, and so I went to the Kubert School about 2 years after graduation.
Right. And did you have much interaction with Joe himself? Because was it last year when Joe died? It was last year, wasn't
right,
it?
Right, yeah.
It's kind of gone so quick, but there was all that talk about all the famous alumni that had come through the school, and there were some great images drawn, you know, with the faces of people that had graduated, and you were one of the prominent names and faces that was there. So how much interaction did you actually have with Joe, and how much did he sort of input into your work?
Joe, when I was going to the school back in the 80s, Joe was very hands-on. The school was still young. He was teaching narrative art classes, so I had him every week for a narrative art class. And, of course, you know, he taught storytelling, and, you know, you can't learn from somebody better than Joe Kubert, so that was really a great great guy to learn from, and a very, you know, great guy in general. And he was very, even though my style was always a little more offbeat and more cartoony, he was always very supportive and... You know, he had been around comics so long, he just knew everything about Marvel, DC, Archie. Mm. So he was a really, really, you know, I could... Someone like him, you can, you know, you can't pay for that. Well, I did pay for it, but but you just can't... It's invaluable, his training.
Yeah. Was it due to his contributions at all that you wanted to actually write and illustrate your own work? Because, you know, like, were you setting out to be an artist, or did you always want to write your stuff as well?
I used to write a lot of stuff when I was in school. Like, I used to do a lot of crazy, stories and assignments. But I was really into the artwork at first. Like, my main goal was to just be drawing all the time. So once I started working at Archie, you know, they were pretty open to story ideas and things like that. So in fact, when I started, I was there also with my other fellow ex-QB, Bill Gallier, who's another guy that, and we used to write a lot of stuff together. For Archie, but then as time went on, after I was at Archie 4 or 5 years, I just got really comfortable writing too, and then that led into, like, you know, the Love Showdown storyline that I worked on in the early 90s, and I just been writing since then.
Now, you didn't start off doing art at Archie, right? You started off doing production.
I worked in production for 10 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah. And actually, it was great. That's another great thing. You learn how to put a comic book together from beginning to end, which was really good. At the same time, I was freelancing at home. So I was doing production during the day. I would go home at night and do freelance. So I was sort of getting this really well-rounded education. And then also, when I was at Archie for about a year, I was working in licensing. So I was doing a lot of, like, when we were doing, like, toy designs, package designs, I was doing a lot of that stuff, too. And that was still in the days before, that was right when computers started to take over. So I started doing it the old-fashioned way with, you know, no one in here will even know what I'm talking about under the age of 40, but when we had to cut things and paste stuff, we
used an X-Acto knife, Zip-A-Tone.
Right. And after being in Archie, like, 5 or 6 years, everything switched over to desktop publishing. So then I had to sort of adjust myself to that, too. So once again, I was kind of getting an on-the-job education doing that. I learned how to do it, you know, from writing, drawing, production. I learned it all there. So
how did you actually end up going to Archie then from the Cubitt School? Was it something where they'd kind of scouted you ahead of time? Was it you looking where you could fit in? Because obviously you did production first. Mm-hmm. How did you end up going from Cubitt to Archie?
Well, Victor Gorelick, who was a longtime editor at Archie, he would go down to the Cubitt School every year and look at portfolios. Mm-hmm. So he came down in my third year and looked at our portfolios. He liked some of my stuff. So I actually started doing like one-page gags and things when I was still in school.
Right.
So I did have a couple things published right as I was finishing up school. And he started to give me more work as as I was graduating. And then fortunately, a spot opened up in the art department because one of the guys was leaving. And he was like, well, do you want to take his spot? Which, of course, you know, that's a great position to be in because, you know, if you're trying to get freelance from Archie and you're in the art department every day, you're in the prime spot to get it. So 2 weeks after I graduated, I started at Archie back in 1987 and have been there ever since.
Now, when you first start pitching stories, you're working in the production department and you're pitching your first story from Victor. How'd that go?
Well, there was a lot of rejections. There's, you know, the way we learned is we would pitch stories, and sometimes they'd be like, nah, I don't know about this. So then we learned to pitch stories by giving him a selection of stories. You give him like 6 or 7 story ideas. One of them has to not be a piece of crap. Like one of them has to be something that they can hold on to. So usually that's the way it was. He would pick out a story idea that was, you know, workable. And then we'd take that and we'd work you know, a storyline around that. Of course, the more we're there, the more we kind of know the groove of how things work, and then sometimes they'd actually have like a story idea right off the bat. So it got better after a couple of years of knowing what he's looking for. And then when I look back at some of the story ideas that I pitched early on, I mean, they're just insane things. You know, I can totally understand why he wouldn't want them, but at the time they seemed, you know, normal.
A lot of the stuff you're known for now is kind of innovation stuff with Archie. You're really doing stuff that is kind of different. Even though a lot of it is sort of obvious stuff, like in this day and age, having a gay character in the book, or the idea with Love Showdown where it's kind of, well, at some stage he's got to pick, you know, and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What was actually the first one of those? Was it Love Showdown, or was there something earlier where you were really trying to push the envelope a bit?
The first, like, big sort of event storyline that I worked on was the Love Showdown. Mm-hmm. We had done a few things, like, the first kind of thing I did that got any notoriety at all was the Veronica book, because Veronica had never had her own title, and I did pitch that Veronica should have her own title. So that got some media play, because, you know, you had a company that was around for almost 50 years, and yet one character that was one of the main characters didn't have her own book, so we did get some play out of that. But then in the early 90s, the Love Showdown thing was sort of, we didn't know it would take off like the way it did. We wanted to do something that would be sort of attention getting. We wanted to kind of shake the Archie love triangle up. But we didn't know it would get the press that it got. It got, like, I mean, at the time it was all over the place. You know, Today Show, USA Today. And this is the pre-digital age, you know, where everything was tweeted and on Facebook and online. So it got a lot of press, and it got a lot of press because we did commit that Archie was going to choose someone other than Betty and Veronica. You know, we know that how long that lasted, but it did revive Cheryl Blossom.
Yeah.
Because Cheryl Blossom had gone away in the 80s because she was kind of a racy character, and they didn't know what to do with her. So Bill Gallier and I loved Cheryl Blossom, so we thought that would be like a prime way to bring her back, and not just create some new random character. Mm. So by revealing that he was choosing Cheryl Blossom over Betty and Veronica, that got a lot of attention. And it gave her, you know, spawned her solo book that lasted 4 or 5 years. You know, so she it did bring her to prominence for a while.
And, I mean, one of my favorite things that you've done, there was the Betty and Veronica fashion book. I can't remember what it's called now.
Spectacular.
Which I've got to admit, I really love. Did you guys ever see this one? It was kind of laid out almost like a fashion magazine. And I was kind of curious as to how you tap into that sort of stuff and what sort of research you do. Because it's not like I would look at you and go, yeah, this guy's going to create a comic book that's like a fashion magazine. Mm-hmm. So how do you come to something like that? And what do you have to do to...
Well, you look at a lot of fashion magazines. and you go online and look at a lot of fashion websites. but that book, you know, occurred because basically the Betty and Veronica Spectacular book was... It was really do or die. They were ready to cancel it. So it was sort of like, we got to try something. Mm-hmm. So by letting me do that, it gave life to the book for a few more years. And so that's really how that took off. And it worked because it did well for quite a while. And we did get a lot of attention. And also, it was sort of like, that was sort of when I found like my style that I like to sort of just... I mean, it's weird. It took me like 20 years to like sort of get into a comfortable groove, but... It did. It took me like it was up to that point where I was when I finally started to really feel comfortable about my artwork.
Yeah, you mentioned...
Well, I mean, before it was more you're trying to do a house style and do a Dan DiCarlo style, right? And
right.
That's when you started feeling that Dan Parent style would be...
It was tough because, you know, obviously Dan DiCarlo is pretty much set the Archie House style and everybody wants to draw like Dan DiCarlo. And I mean, I even worked with Dan DiCarlo. I used to finish a lot of his stories. He'd lay them out. I would finish a lot of his work for him, especially in his last few years. So it was a great place to learn, but it can kind of inhibit you too. Like, I did sort of feel like, you know, they were looking for another Dan DiCarlo, and there's only one Dan DiCarlo.
Right.
So I think it was better to sort of take the best of what he teaches and create your own style. And that kind of happened when the B&V Spectacular came out. I sort of felt like I was able to do, you know, take the best of his work, but really make it my own. Hmm. And so then I loosened up a lot, too. Like, I always found that when I was harder to draw, like, Dan DiCarlo, it would be tighter. It wouldn't be as loose as I could make, as I can work now.
And you also had some really interesting cover work on that book.
Yeah.
Very different
yeah.
than what Archie yeah. actually was doing at the time.
Yeah, they just wanted, like, more graphic imagery, simpler stuff. I think they had looked at sales, and they had seen that sometimes the covers that... You know, for many years, we would do, like, lots of covers where there was lots of dialogue and gags and stuff, lots of characters, and then characters that are covers that are a little more graphic and simpler, you know, something that pops off when you're in a bookstore and you're looking at it on the bookshelf. And I think that's... When that book came out, it's sort of where we were going with sort of that more graphic, simpler image. And I think we kind of still follow that today. I think we still, you know, sometimes we have more detailed covers, but I think we still go with more of that graphic look.
Were you kind of surprised when your style ended up becoming the new house style? Because as someone from the outside looking in, I kind of go, Dan Parent is the Archie House style artist now. And I say that in the best possible way, not, you know, in any homogenous way, but you really hold the flag and set the standard for that now. You know, did you notice when that change actually happened as well, and how does it feel?
I still don't really know if I feel that. I mean, I still think of Dan DiCarlo as the Archie House style. To me, that seems like that's always going to be the way it is. And there's so many styles now. I mean, there's like, you know, like Fernando Ruiz does a really great job. He's got a great style. And you've got, like, you know, then you've got the other classics artists like Harry Lucy. So there's a lot of different styles at Archie. And, you know, I'm, you know, currently I'm happy to you know, be the, you know, like one of the current artists. But there's after 70 years, there's a lot of different styles.
There's an interesting thing. How do you pick the clothes for Betty and Veronica for each issue?
Usually, magazines. Sometimes online, but you know, you subscribe to all these magazines.
How many magazines do you subscribe to?
Oh my gosh! I mean, the coffee table's full of magazines. It's full. Yeah. And then so a lot of times you just you watch a TV show or something, and you see like something that catches your eye, and you just either try and remember it, or you know, you kind of sketch it down really quickly so you remember it. So just sort of just being observant of what's going on. I know Dan DiCarlo used to do that too. He was always being very aware of what, you know, young kids wore, and would stop someone on the street and like sketch an outfit just because he thought it looked good.
So that way you make sure the characters stay current too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, because, I mean, and that's tough, too, because you can get into the old routine of putting them in the same clothes, but you don't want to be putting them in, you know, like, 1980s clothes if you're drawing a story currently. And,
yeah.
So, yeah, you got to be aware of that.
I remember meeting George Glatter here one year at the show, and he was always like that, you know, like, I was saying some facts about young people that I'd read recently, and he was like, what was that again? And he gets out a pad, you know, and a pen, and he just starts writing it down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So is that the kind of thing, you're just always consuming stuff wherever you are?
Yeah, you want to, you know, it just helps along with, you know, come up with new story ideas, too. Mm-hmm. George was really great, because whenever you'd work on a George Glatter story, he would always send, like, a pile of reference with it, and it was so great. Even in this current day, it's not like he would send you like a link or an email. He would actually send you pages ripped out of magazines, and that was great. I mean, and he was another one too, who always was like, you know, so observant of what was going on.
I think one of the things that a lot of people here would probably know you for is the Kevin Keller stuff, which has got a lot of publicity and a lot of attention of late. How did that actually come about? What was your sort of involvement in that? Did you come to Archie with the idea, or was it given to you to pad out? What happened there?
That was sort of a, I would say, like a joint effort. You know, John Goldwater has been our CEO now for 5 years, and when he came on board, he was very open to trying new things. Things gotten a little stodgy there for a while. We hadn't really had a lot of new characters, and we wanted to, you know, Archie sells all over the world. We have a lot of, you know, different ethnicities and different types of people all over the world buying our books. So we wanted to reflect that in the comics. So, you know, one of the ideas was to bring more diversity into the books, create new characters. We gave Archie a great romance with Valerie from Josie and the Pussycats. We hadn't really had an interracial romance in the books with one of the main characters. And then the other suggestion was to come up with a gay character. And so when I presented it to John was like, you know, he's all for it. He just wanted to be very... make sure that we did it well.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't just some like one-off sort of like a stunt type of thing. We wanted it to be like a real character with legs that would stay around for a while.
Now, did you expect him to get his own book immediately? Did you? Now, no. you'd pitched the idea of a gay character before, hadn't you?
I think maybe like a year before it had come up, but it just wasn't like a reality yet. But when John came on board, it was a reality. Like, John was like, let's do it. So that was when it really moved forward. And then you go into the process of, you know, sketching, whether you want the character to be a boy or a girl. You know, we had to, like, kind of figure that out. And the reason it was a guy is because I worked on the Veronica book, and we really needed to... The plot line just came about that this character would come into town who was gay, and Veronica didn't know it and couldn't figure it out. She can be pretty dense sometimes. And so that's really how... You know, it came that the gay character would be a boy, and that was, you know. So, you know, you have to really think about the story first, and that's sort of where that came from.
Now, some of the stories run just a few pages, and it's a short gag, and you do some of those in the digest and things like that. And some of them will run multi-parts for, you know, several issues and collect it in trade. What type of different process do you go through when you're doing something that's short versus something that's going to be long-term?
Well, God, it's been a while since I've done, like, just a 5-page story. You know, we do so many longer stories now. I think just the way comic books seem to be nowadays, it seems to just that lend themselves to longer stories, especially when we're doing, like, crossover stuff. Like, the Archie Kiss storyline that we did, that lent itself to a long story. And the Glee, too. The Glee is just, that's just the way that works. But the process is different because, I mean, a 5-page Archie story, you can write it in, like, you know, an hour. you can map it out in your head in, like, no time. And basically, the short stories revolve around a gag at the end. So sometimes you come up with a gag at the end first, and then you come up with the story around it. The longer stories are good because you can really flesh out the characters. You can flesh out dialogue. You don't have to, like, wrap it up in, like, a short story. So I like the longer stories for things like the Archie-Valerie storyline. You needed, like, a long storyline because there's a romance that's building, and you need to sort of, you know, you can't wrap that up in five pages. But I think both ideas work. I think Archie's known for their 5-page, 6-page stories, and we're doing a lot more longer stories. I think both, coexist well.
Is the change coming because of your interest as a writer, where you want to expand and do longer form stories, or do you think it's a reaction and a response to the audience and what they're looking for these days?
Both, really. I mean, I think a lot of new readers like the long form stories. Mm. And I think, too, like now a lot of stories nowadays get collected in trades, so people are used to reading longer stories in that format. But there's always, with the digests and with the best of compilations we do, there's always going to be all the 5-pagers floating around. Mm. But I think, from what I gather, people like the long stories. I don't know if there's a preference or not. I guess you have to take polls on that. But from what I gather, people like those.
And how much deliberation goes into whether you're going to introduce a new character or use an existing character for a particular role? Like, I was thinking the Archie-Valerie romance, you already had Valerie as part of the Pussycat, so mm-hmm. she was already there. But then someone like Kevin you brought in, it wasn't suddenly, hey, Jughead's gay. Right. How much discussion goes on behind the scenes, and how do you actually work out what the line is between where you're going to introduce a new character or use someone you've already got?
Right. Well, with Valerie, she always was an underused character. She always was the smart and sexy one in the Pussycats, and we sort of never really, used her to, and it was a good way to get to know her. And then the Archie romance thing with her just sort of, I don't know, it just was like a, just came out of discussions we had. Mm. The thing with Kevin is, without introducing a gay character, it would better be to do it with a new character, because the other characters have been around so long, and it wouldn't have felt like right if we had just, made Jughead gay. It just wouldn't have been true to the character, even though a lot of people say that he is. It's just jokingly, it's always been that rumor, but Jughead just basically doesn't like girls because he watches Archie and all his nonsense with Betty and Veronica and wants no part of it. So.
And how did you feel with the response to Kevin as far as the stuff with finally getting the GLAAD Award, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
And obviously praise from external media and that sort of thing. How does that feel to be recognized for your work outside of comics?
Oh, it feels great. It's really great. It's wonderful to get that attention. It's good for Archie Comics. It's good for me. It's good for society. It's good for kids to be able to pick up a comic book and there's a gay character in there and it's not a big deal. And if a kid is gay or struggling with his identity, to have somebody to relate to can make a big difference.
Yeah.
Versus what it was like 30, 40 years ago when that was not even an option. Or I think probably 10 years ago it was not an option.
Have you had any really good stories that you can tell us about as far as people responding to you in a really personal way and saying, wow, your work has helped me with this and that sort of thing?
I've had some gay teenagers have expressed their being how thankful they are. I think the main group is people in their 30s, 40s, people who kind of grew up without this and show their appreciation for it. And we've had a lot of recognition from parents with gay children. I see them at these shows like this, at conventions like this, and they come up to us and they're like, my daughter's gay, my son is gay, and we love what Archie Comics is doing. It's just because we're not making it, we're not on a soapbox or anything. We're just presenting it as, a normal kid who's gay, and it for any parent who has a gay child, it means that much more.
Mm. There is actually a pretty good focus on the parents of the kids in the books in general, I think. Like, you've always had Mr. Lodge there, and I think a lot of the times he was just a foil and a joke and that sort of thing, but you were able to do more with him in the Veronica book, and then you've got Kevin's family is a lot more involved in his book. Was that a conscious decision on your part to bring the parents back into the books a bit more? Was it about responding to the fact that a lot of your audience had grown up, so you wanted to have some way for them to relate rather than just having to revert to being teenagers again?
Well, I think we brought the parents in. With Kevin, it was a conscious decision to sort of show that he had a very normal, stable family life. We wanted to show that he has parents who were very supportive of him. I mean, we know that the story goes both ways. Some parents who got gay children are not supportive, but we wanted to show that, you know, this is Riverdale. We want to show the way it should be.
Yeah.
And like, as far as like Mr. Lodge or other parents go, I mean, I used to use Mr. Lodge all the time in the Veronica book, just because, you know, it's just great comedy. And, you know, when you have kids of yourself, you can sort of relate, you know, to the parents more. Like, you know, as you write the stories more, you can sort of relate to why Mr. Lodge flips his lid a lot. And I used to use Mrs. Lodge a lot, too. Like, Mrs. Lodge was almost non-existent.
Yeah.
And so she became a lot more prominent in the Veronica book, too.
And as far as what's coming up next, can you talk a little bit about other things you've got in the pipeline or ideas that you've got? Like, are there things that you're still really itching to do that you say, hey, we haven't broken this barrier yet?
I'm trying to think. I'm just, you know, right now I'm just working ahead on the Kevin book and on some Archie stuff. Kevin will keep going forward. Kevin has a boyfriend now. We'll see what happens with him and his boyfriend. It won't be all, like, smooth sailing, mm-hmm. you know. But that, we'll get into that in the new year more. And with Archie, I'm working on Archie 650 is another kind of sort of, you know, semi-milestone issue. So we're doing a thing called Archie's World Tour. It's going to be a four-issue series where Archie, the Archies go on a world tour. Right. So we also get Valerie back into the mix. But then, of course, Archie meets a few, you know, new starlets along the way. So, you know, it's Archie, you know, just can't
help himself.
He can't help himself. So we meet a couple new characters we're introducing, a new Indian girl he meets. He becomes involved in sort of like a Bollywood sort of romance. Mm. And that's an Archie 650, and that we've got Archie, we've got Josie and the Pussycats, with the Bingos. You remember the Bingo Wilkin boy.
Yeah.
We've got the Madhouse Glads. Any kind of musical incarnation that ever happened in Archie is going to be in this storyline. And then we've got even Katie Keene and Sabrina are in the story. So it's like, once again, it's a big cast.
It's the Archie World Tour. I
seem to get a lot of these big cast assignments.
And all the high-profile ones. It's that thing these days.
Yeah, it's all good.
I thought I should ask, before we get too carried away, as to whether people have got some questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
You said early on that you would pitch story ideas that would get rejected. Is there one you can remember that kind of stands out?
Just really weird stuff. I mean, I didn't think it was weird at the time, but, you know, from coming out of school and doing a lot of crazy assignments in school, I wish I could remember. I mean... one kind of ended up being a book that wasn't one of I liked it, but it wasn't one of our bigger successes. We, at the time, Pee-wee's Playhouse was really big, so a lot of us were like that crazy sense of humor. So anytime we would do a story that had anything like craziness like that, they would just say no. But then we did do a book called Jughead's Diner, which was sort of like that. It was like this crazy world that made no sense. So that was sort of the kind of story I was sort of pitching at the time. That one actually made it to print.
Archie used to have a place for those more off the wall, you know, like Madhouse.
Right.
You have different tones in the story used in the characters. Is it just not set up to do like maybe a Madhouse one shot or limited runs or miniseries?
I don't know. I mean, they do trades. They did do a Best of Madhouse hardcover. Like a trick.
Like new stuff that you can go with your crazier ideas. Everybody who's got a crazy idea can throw it in the Madhouse one shot.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's always a chance of that happening. I guess if there's enough of a call for it. I mean, Madhouse has a cult following. It's a matter of taking a cult following and seeing if it would have, like, you know, sort of like a mainstream effect, you know, where it would sell. That's like the... You'd buy it. Okay, that's one. All right.
Two. Okay, hey, we doubled our circulation already.
Right. Well, we are doing a... next month, I've got an issue of Archie coming out where it's called Mirrordale. It's like kind of like a bizarro version of Archie. So they go into this funhouse mirror. Yeah, this would fit into like a Madhouse storyline. They go to a carnival, and they go into like a funhouse mirror, and they see like the opposites of themselves. Like Jughead's like a womanizer, and... Reggie's like this little like nerd, so that's a fun story. That's it's out pretty soon. It should be out in a few weeks.
One thing I actually wanted to ask you about quickly, because this is the Spotlight on Dan Parent panel and not just Spotlight on Archie, and I think it's really easy because you're synonymous to just talk about the Archie work, but mm-hmm. there's other stuff that you've done, which mm-hmm. I've kind of encountered, and I don't know where it fits in the timeline. So
okay.
there was Felix the Cat,
right.
you did some of that,
right?
And then what's the kind of racy book that you did?
Oh.
I want to hear about this.
Okay, well, the Felix the Cat, I'll start with Felix first,
okay.
and then I'll get to the racy. The Felix the Cat was, I worked there from the early 90s up until really recently, and I just they did a black and white comic for about 10 years. Mm. So I was also like doing that in between the Archie stuff. And then I worked in the office at Felix for, I don't know, a few years, more than that even. I go in like 1 or 2 days a week. I worked on licensing. So I would do a lot of like Felix designs for like T-shirts and merchandise. Felix is very big overseas, and I've always had a good relationship with the guy who owns the who's the owner of the character, Don Oriolo. So I've always had done quite a lot of work for Felix, mm-hmm. and I also back in the early 90s worked on like Barbie stuff, Barbie comics, and some
my
Barbie
daughter's
books.
Favorite. She still talks about them.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of painful actually. That I don't know. Paid well, but it wasn't like my favorite. And the worst thing I ever worked on was Bratz. Oh, I hated that. It was awful.
Oh yeah, that's dead. You can
awful.
Say that
oh,
now.
I can say yeah, Bratz is gone, but it was not enjoyable at all. But they always would call me for those assignments. But then I did in the '90s. I did these romance comics.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like twisted tales of twisted romance stories. Parodying what was going on at the time, like I think talk shows were big, so we had like a couple of Jerry Springer kind of stories, and what else did we do? But it was just sort of like PG-13 rated romance stories.
Yeah,
and that went on for a few years, and then the guy who was publishing them kind of went away, but I had all the rights to the stuff, so. I put out a trade myself with some of the stuff in it. And, you know, it's fun. Every once in a while, someone will bring one up to me and have me sign it.
Yeah, what was it? Was it the Carnies or something like that?
Oh, then we had the Carnies. That was an Archie project. Yeah, that was with Archie, actually.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I thought you self-published that.
We did self-publish that, too.
Okay.
But with the Carnies, Archie did publish an issue. Well, the way Carnies came about was, this is back in the early crazy days. This is one of the crazy early projects. Bill Gallier and I came up with the Carnies, which was basically a family of circus carnies who tried to live amongst, you know, normal America. We would do like 5 and 6 page stories in the Sabrina book.
Mm-hmm.
Then Archie and Friends. Because Archie and Friends would feature Sabrina. Archie and Friends was a title where you could try different things. So for a couple years, we had ran Carney stories in there. And then Archie decided to let's try one shot. And it was truly just a one shot. It didn't go further than that. It's a giant sized book. So we did that, and then we self-published an issue, Bill Gallier and I, after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a lot of fun. It was, it was fun to, you know, Archie did support it. And,
yeah.
We had an animation deal with Hanna-Barbera that never panned out. Or it was Cartoon Network, like a holding deal. Once again, mm-hmm. it was held forever. It didn't happen.
Withheld.
It was withheld. So, but that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Mm. So yeah, I've had a lot of fun. I mean. Can't complain.
I know we had a question down here before I interrupted you.
Let's go back to Archie. When you pitched the Bronx's series, did you pitch that she would go to a different country in every issue? How did that come about?
I didn't pitch it right away. First, they had sort of agreed. That was a time when they were trying a bunch of new titles, most of which failed.
Faculty Funnies. Remote Control Races.
Yeah, those died very fast.
They
all went down in flames. But they were up for the Veronica book, and then that was like sort of the angle, because they didn't want it to do like just a 5-page Veronica stories. And I came up with the idea, well, since she's rich and can go anywhere she wants, and even make it kind of educational in a way, in a fun way, well, we would try that. So the first 20 issues were her traveling around the world. And then after the... issue 20, they decided just to go with a regular Veronica format. The new editor came on board, and he was tired of the traveling stuff. I would have kept doing the traveling stuff forever. I really liked it, but So then we went with the regular format, and then then the book went on. You know, it went on for like 208 issues. So.
Now, what made you decide to move as far away from Archie as possible when you went to work every single day?
I was out looking for cheap real estate.
Because you had like a two-hour commute every day, right?
Well, when I first started at Archie, I was living in New Jersey, which is like an hour away. It was pretty normal of a commute. Then Archie let me work 3 days a week. So when they let me go to 3 days a week, I was like, well, I'm not commuting every day. So I'll just like look around. So we moved to Pennsylvania, so which is a good two and a half hours away. Yeah. But then when I went freelance, it was fine. I still go up to the Archie offices every other week, you know, to bring work in and stuff. Yeah. So, it was sort of like, well, Northern New Jersey is very expensive. So, and now of course now Pennsylvania is now too. So it caught up with everywhere else. But when I moved out there, it wasn't so. We live in that tri-state sort of commuting area, so.
Do we have some more questions? Yeah?
You talk a lot about Dan DiCarlo being the house style. Mm-hmm. Do you still think of it that way? Mm-hmm. Do you ever look at, seek out other artists that did something that you liked in R&B, try and get away from Dan, consciously get away from Dan DiCarlo a little bit,
You know, I admire, after Dan DiCarlo, I think Harry Lucy is the best Archie artist. But then,
is there something about him that you like that he does?
Harry Lucy, just the expressions. He always did these exaggerated expressions. And, you know, and I also loved Sam Schwartz's Jughead stuff. Because through the history of Archie, he probably had the most unique style. And it fit Jughead so well. And, he had no sense of style, like with the girls and stuff, but it worked. It was so funny. He just had this like really like dry. It was almost as dry. He had a dry sense of humor in real life too. So I appreciate all of those Archie artists for that. Dan DiCarlo, I think I just probably appreciate him the most just because I grew up on it, and even before I knew who Dan DiCarlo was, I would always look at his artwork, and I couldn't believe how beautiful his artwork was. And no one was ever drawn, girls like Dan, ever.
So. Millie the Model, or any of that?
Yeah, Millie the Model. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. And yep, Millie the Model. And then there was, then DC had their there was one time where everybody was ripping off Archie because Archie was so popular, and DC had Binky and Debbie, and then there was Tower Comics with Tippy Teen. There was so many Archie ripoffs at one time. And a lot of them were actually done by a lot of the Archie artists, too, under some of them are different names, sometimes not. But I was, fans of all of that stuff, if the art was good. But, the Archie stuff was always the best. Archie was the original, and they were always the best.
Now, you were on Weakest Link.
Oh, God.
You were on Millionaire.
Yep, yep.
So, any more TV appearances we can...
No, I don't think so.
Well, do you have to register for game shows, or how do you end up on TV doing the game shows?
Usually what you do is, at least back then, back a few years ago, on their website they have a thing, you just send in your name and your email or something, and then they tell you when there's tryouts in your area, so you have to actually go and sit there and try out. Like for Millionaire, you have to take a test.
Right, because they don't want you to come on and...
They don't want you a moron, right. Okay.
And they don't want you to win.
right. Well, I didn't win much, so. Then if they call you back again, they just sort of interview you on camera to make sure you're not going to freeze up or that you have some sort of personality. But, that's basically how it works. And then I went on those shows back when there was all these game shows on in primetime.
Yes.
After Millionaire, after the whole Millionaire thing.
Yeah.
Do they still have Family Feud here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the parents Steve, on that.
Oh, yeah.
my wife and my son watch it with Steve Harvey. I assume it's new.
Yeah. Yeah. I know they've got, Let's Make a Deal is on again now, and I don't know.
Was it Drew Carey doing The Price is Right?
Drew Carey's doing, yeah.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
But there you go. I could imagine you doing that and running down and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I don't think so. I just some dignity.
So we talked about your secret origins of comics and mm-hmm. stuff you used to read. Do you mm-hmm. still actually read other comics?
Yeah.
Outside of Archie, is there stuff that you're really enjoying at the moment or classic stuff that you constantly reread?
I mean, I have like piles of books that I just don't get to. You know, and I usually am guided by art first. Like, you know, I like Darwin Cook a lot, and I like Amanda Conner a lot. So I'll buy anything they draw. I don't care what if the story's bad or not. I'll just buy it to look at it.
So you got Before Watchmen.
I did. Yeah, I did. And then I read it. It's all right. You know, I mean, I know people don't like it, but you know.
Yeah.
But those are the ones, I bought the Darwin and the Amanda ones, and you know, I'll get caught up in like I got caught up in the new Justice League for a while, and I kind of dropped off on that. You know, I'll get caught up in something, and but I'm a big DC guy. I've always been like a big DC Comics fan. But I go back to, then I read like Walking Dead, of course. Everyone reads that. And, reading Saga, which is good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I do. I wish I could read more. You know, like I said, I'll buy the books, they just pile up.
See, now I remember your secret origin being that you were the love child of Paul Lynn and Agnes Moorehead.
Yeah, yeah, that was my early bio. some people really believed it, too. I put fake bios of myself on my website just because my own story is so boring. And I'd make up celebrities that I was like the child of, and people would ask me. People believed it. I thought Agnes Moorehead was my mother. I was like, all right, I'll go with that.
And you were saying before about doing the Felix stuff and that sort of thing. So you were doing that alongside the Archie work,
right?
Are you available to be doing other stuff? Like, could we actually see where they do one of those Marvel Strange Tales and get someone completely different in to do a take on one of their characters? Can you do that sort of stuff now?
When I can. I mean, a couple of years ago, I did an issue of Hack Slash, which was fun. Right. I know Tim Seeley, and I really like him.
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, yeah. We did it in Archie style, too. But, so that was a lot of fun. And I like to do stuff like that when I can. It does get very difficult, especially with conventions. I do a lot of conventions. Mm. So you have to sort of make up your mind. Are you going to do conventions or extra freelance? And it usually turns out to be conventions right at this point. There's a slight break in the winter time. From like December to February, where there's not a lot of shows,
right?
But you know, the shows are fun, and you know, I love doing them.
Do we have some more questions for Dan? Come on, I know we do.
Anything?
No, don't be shy.
So, yes. How does it work with the family traveling with the conventions?
In the summertime, it works out great.
Yeah,
in the summertime, it works out great. I've got my sons out there now, and my sister-in-law, and my niece are out there. But in the summertime, I bring, my son Adam comes with me in the summertime to whatever shows I do. And I'll try and bring my wife when I can. She's at this show. She's watching my table, actually, now. Then, during the school year, it's a little tougher. It's nice to travel with family, though, because it's a little easier.
Yeah.
And... but yeah, you try to make a little bit of a vacation out of it. I mean, San Diego is a great place to go for a vacation, so we try and, you know, come out a few days earlier so we can sort of enjoy, you know, the area. Yeah. And
That reminds me. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell them their story about traveling to Mexico with Fernando?
Oh, jeez. Well, long story short, it's the only few minutes. Fernando Ruiz, who's the other Archie guy that I work with a lot, we went to... it was back in 2006. We're talking, what is it, 7 years ago. We went to Tijuana and had a kind of an unfortunate situation there. We were with another friend of mine who was walking around with an open beverage container. You don't do that in Tijuana. So the cops sort of found us and kind of roughhoused us a little bit. Pushed us in an alley and sort of... so basically bribery worked. I just threw some money at him. He kind of went away. So
is that what they were sort of pressing for all along?
I think so. I don't know what they were pressing for. I just didn't want to spend the night in a Tijuana jail.
Yeah.
And Fernando speaks Spanish, and he wasn't able to get us out of any situation. So that was our Tijuana story. So that's that was 7 years ago. Wow. Fernando hasn't been back since.
to San Diego or Tijuana?
Either. I don't think he's going to go to either. So hopefully we'll get him back to San Diego at some point. But.
Okay, we did have a question over here.
Oh, yeah. Out of the whole Archie universe, what was your favorite character and why?
Well, for the male characters, I would say Jughead. And then, of course, Kevin Keller, of course, because, you know, my attachment to Kevin. And then the girl character is Veronica, you know. And then there's always like, well, then I think, well, I like Cheryl Blossom a lot too. I start to think about the other characters that I really like, but offhand to say Jughead and Veronica.
Now, when you create your own character, like you did with Kevin, does that give you much more of an attachment to the character? And how do you feel when other people use him in a story?
You do feel attached. And I remember when they were going to do Kevin in Life with Archie, if I don't write Life with Archie,
right.
They wanted to bring Kevin to that fold. And, you know, I was happy that he was in the, you know, it's popular. But you do get a little possessive because you've created the character. But, you know, fortunately, Paul Cooperberg is such a, you know, great writer. He's did such a great job with the whole Kevin wedding storyline. But you do sort of feel, I guess, protective. Like, even if I wasn't writing it or drawing it, as long as it was being done well, that's what I would want. But you definitely do, you do feel, you know, attachment. Sure.
Do you ever get approached to look at this stuff ahead of time, like almost a little bit of an edit as far as, oh, Kevin wouldn't speak like that, you know, that's not the right voice there.
Well, Archie did Penguin Books did a book, a Kevin book that was all text, you know, that like a little novel that Paul Cooperberg wrote, and I read that beforehand, and I really liked it. I made a couple minor suggestions, but 98% of it was really good.
Mm.
And even with the Kevin, the wedding, you know, Archie's very respectful. They asked me to help create his boyfriend, who was later his husband. So I worked on that for the Life with Archie. So yeah, they'll kind of show me the stuff beforehand.
So I haven't had a chance actually to read the Life with Archie one where Kevin gets married, but is it the same boyfriend that you're introducing in the new year that he sees it getting...
No.
Okay.
No.
Because I was going to say, that would sort of create all sorts of problems in the, you know, everyone knows the end of the story.
Right, right. No. It's a totally different universes. Like it's telling us to stop.
Aha. All right. Well, that is it, I guess. So thank you for joining us for the Spotlight with Ed.